Speak on it.
Ramadan Mubarak to the fam out there. Is anyone has anyone had difficulty? It's a weird start, right? It's quarantine and Ramadan. It's like, you know, when there was Easter and quarantine, everything looks a bit different nowadays, eh?
It's only like what, 2 p.m. 2:35, and I'm already hungry.
Well, you know, may God grant us the grace to to hold out. But you're good. You're good. Only 6 hours till iftar. You're all right. You're all right.
I have a question. Seeing as somebody isn't necessarily participating in Ramadan, but I have fasted before.
Do you?
I was gonna say, do you guys? But do you drink water?
Yes. No. So the fast is no water. I mean, there's a number of things that are excused if women are menstruating. For instance, they're not required to fast. In fact, they're not supposed to fast. You know, if you're pregnant, if you're sick, if you're traveling, if you're doing strenuous work. There's so many different accommodations, but yes, the fast is no food, no water.
And do you mind if I actually ask a couple of questions just for our listeners out there, just so they can get the...
I think it's a wonderful way for listeners to get involved and understand what's going on. You might notice that we have less participants at this time, and we might have to think about our recording times, but a lot of people stay up till Fajr, which is the morning prayer, which around this time is at 4 a.m. And so before the morning prayer, people eat so that they're not necessarily hungry during the day. Go ahead, ask your questions.
Oh no, like that was just really great insight. My question is, like, in terms of like, what are the spiritual practices during Ramadan? Because whenever I fast, my dad's like, yo, like, make sure you're praying and actually relying upon the word of God to like sustain you during this time. Because like, if you're not like getting closer to God, you're going on a hunger strike. You're not really fasting to get that spiritual connection.
Right.
And that was his opinion on it. So I want to know, what are the spiritual practices during Ramadan, that you guys participate in?
Yeah, I think it's different for everyone, but, Shad, you want to,
Actually, I'm not religious. I'm agnostic, so I don't really celebrate Ramadan or Eid or really any like religious holidays. But I know with my friends, like I have a lot of friends who are fasting right now for Ramadan,
right.
And they really like they're the type to like pray like 5 times a day.
Yeah.
Every day, right? So like they really do use that, I feel like they use that that time to get closer to God, right? So they're just like leaning on him to give them strength to get through this time. So
right. Rami?
I don't know if I can answer that.
Yeah. What is fasting do for you apart from make you hungry?
I don't even know, really.
Yeah.
I just do it blindly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the case with a lot of people. I mean, you know, there's a lot of judgment that comes around this time if people aren't fasting. There's a lot of expectation for people to fast, it being one of the five pillars of Islam. But the idea is that when you are, it's not much different than Lent for Catholics or Christians, whereby you are giving up something essential to direct your focus on something more important. So the idea is that when you are excluding yourself from eating or drinking, you are reminded of why you're doing that. And why you're doing that is in order to get closer to God. But you're also thinking about people who in regular circumstances don't have access to food or water, the poor, the underserved, the underprivileged. And part of the Ramadan festivities is giving to charities, giving to the underprivileged, the underserved, volunteering. This is all part of it. It is supposed to be a cleansing of the heart, of the mind, of the soul, of the spirit, in that you're not supposed to necessarily indulge yourself in acts or thoughts that are necessarily negative. There's supposed to be peace that comes upon you. Your thoughts are kind and generous. And I mean, you know, it's difficult. It's, you know, almost impossible, but this is the intent that you put behind your fast and your fasting. So, you know, there's a show on Netflix, it's called Too Hot to Handle, where
I was about to go on Instagram, but I'm like, it's weird because not The Bachelor, because like Bachelor comes on at a certain time,
right, each week.
So like if I were to do it, and I was just like, I'd have to have a schedule.
Right.
And I'm already three episodes deep. So
into Too Hot to Handle?
Into Too Hot to Handle.
Yeah. So they put a bunch of beautiful people on a island, and they are not to have any sort of sexual contact. And with any sexual contact, they are docked thousands of dollars from the prize money. However, this is not a show that I particularly feel great watching during Ramadan. So I binged it right before Ramadan. You know what I'm saying? These kinds of things. So, yeah.
I like that. I actually didn't know that, like, you're supposed to, it's a cleansing of the spirit. Yeah. I thought it was more of like, just like to force you to rely upon the spirit to sustain you. Well, I really like the fact that there's volunteering. There's the positive aspects of the mind. That's something I didn't know. My next question would be,
I ain't like Sheikh Ian, right? Like I'm not, I am not the go-to person to about this. There are more people part of our collective who are definitely more knowledgeable about the religion and the practices, but I will assist where I can.
Oh, okay, perfect. I mean, like, no one here is an expert on all the topics we talk about, especially right. When it comes to like BPR talks about a lot of black stuff. We do not speak for all black people.
That's right.
I speak for my black experience.
That's right.
So with that, I would say, given your experience, how do you deal with the temptation during Ramadan? I know when I was fasting, it was like we were fasting, and then I was placed in this room, and then like I don't know whether the lady knew I was fasting or not, but she was cooking this giant pot of jollof, and I was I was furious.
I got two stories. One. A couple of years ago, I was in Abu Dhabi and Dubai doing some shows, some readings, and it was during Ramadan. I was doing a workshop at a school, and I didn't know, but one of my workshop ideas is prompts is if you could have lunch with anyone, dead or alive, real or imaginary, who would it be? I got in a little bit of trouble from the principal because during Ramadan in these countries, talking about food is rude or, you know, not necessarily right. You're kind of putting people in a situation. I didn't realize, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, imagine a bunch of kids, all they're thinking about is food. And then the workshop leader comes in and starts talking about, you know, oh, what do you want to eat with Oprah? Right. So, I think that there's, in mostly Muslim countries, there's a few, rules and restrictions and, conventions that exist that make the fasting a bit easier. For instance, eating in public, in the same place is, not necessarily allowed. When you go to the malls, there's like a closed off section, where you can't look into that are for foreigners that, you know, so foreigners can eat at any time. But if you are practicing fasting, you don't have to sort of be inundated with the visuals of a food court during that time. My second fasting story is, was it last year? I think it was last year. I was in Ghana, West Africa. And I went, oh no, it was the same year. And after Abu Dhabi, I went to Ghana, West Africa. And when I was there, I mean, like you said, Eddie, you can't go to someone's house and them not offer you food. And it's not like, oh, you can't go to someone's house and them not offer you food. You can't go to someone's house and they're not offering you heaps and loads of food. And it is incredibly rude to not eat anything, let alone not finish your plate, right? This is the expectation. So I was trying to maneuver my way. I was like James Bond in Ramadan in Africa. The thing was wild, yo. I would be like making sure that I only go to people's places, timing it so that I'm like, okay, the sun's going to get down at this time. Then I can get to Auntie's place. Sometimes I'll be in this situation. I'll be like, oh, sorry. You know, like my stomach is not feeling very well. And, you know, it's technically a lie, but it's not technically a lie. My stomach was, you know, I was hungry, right? My stomach was hurting a little bit. But here in North America, I think this quarantine Ramadan is a first for a lot of people. And so, you know, things that I've been thinking about doing are projects, writing, reading, you know, watching television shows. I mean, is such a great way to pass the time. I know some people who've been doing Quran classes, just really getting reinvested in their spirituality, finding that peace, but finding sort of wholesome ways to occupy your time, going for walks, you know, extra long prayers, these kinds of things, I think help pass the time. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you get into your mind like, oh, I don't want to think about food, then all you're thinking about is food. So
But Rami, any stories from you?
No, not at all. Actually, I remember back in grade 5 where we had to do EQAO. They brought snacks.
EQAO.
I guess it's the testing.
Okay.
Like
they do it every 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And they brought snacks during Ramadan, and I was mad as hell because I couldn't do anything about it. Right. And they said that after, when Ramadan was finished, they would give us the snacks back, and they didn't.
Mm.
And I'm still mad about that to this day.
You got ripped off two ways.
Yup.
And like,
false advertisement.
I know I don't celebrate, but like, especially when it's like, it always happens when they're school, right?
Right.
So all of my friends, right, they're like there's nothing that person can do. So we most of the time, we completely ignore it. Like, if we're going to go eat, like, if we eat, we never eat in front of them. We always like, all right, yo, we'll wait until they go to the library, or we'll eat in classes that we're not with them, just because, like, it's so, like, to me, I feel like I'm being so disrespectful if I'm eating in front of somebody and literally all they're thinking of is, yo, can I just have a sip of water? You know what I mean? Because, like,
right.
I don't think that, I think the water part, a lot of my friends have told me, like, not drinking water is harder than getting through, like, not eating food, because my stomach could be, like, hurting, but my throat is dry. Like,
they yeah, a lot of people, the thirst is
the big real.
Thirst is real. Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting, right? For some people, there's an extra sort of challenge of being around people that are eating. And in North America, that's the case, right? If you are in high school, if you are a working person and people around you aren't practicing the fast in the same way on the same days, then there will be a challenge. You will run into, you right? You might pass a food court. Lunchtime happens, you will see a bunch of people eating. But I think that it is also part of the test and part of the challenge and part of the reward of really focusing your mind on your spirituality, your connection to God. Because, you know, what are you going to do, right? Someone's eating the Big Mac in front of you. That's the temptation is right there. And if you're able to hold on out, you know, more power to you, right? I got this, it's called suwak in Arabic, but we have these in Ghana. It's like a chewing stick. So it helps with, you know, teeth cleanliness. It helps with, you know, like breath and stuff.
What about gum?
Gum is breaking your fast. I mean, there's so many... I mean, you know, it's not like they had Trident during the days of Prophet Muhammad, right? There's a lot of different scholars, and they're always debating things, right? They're debating the day that it's that Ramadan starts. They're debating what constitutes a break of the fast. But at the end of the day, it really is about a relationship between you and God and your own spirituality. The rules are just a guideline to help you throughout the process.
On my mind, on my mind, I just can't get it right, can't get it right. It doesn't go away, doesn't go away. Even though I try to ignore it, I just want peace of mind, I want peace of mind. I feel like breaking down time after time, and it keeps coming back, always coming back. Hey, all my life, down it was a part of me. Day and night, I fight my insecurities, asking why, am I, who am I? I just want some peace of mind. And the salam, I mean the salam, tabarakta ya, ya dal jalal wal ikram. And the salam. I need your peace. I still believe with hardship comes ease. Make the stress go away, go away. All my life, I know you've been guiding me. You're the one who knows my destiny. I'll be alright, I'm sure that you look after me. You know what's inside of me. And the salam, I mean the salam.
Yeah, the jalal wal ikram.
till one day told myself no more starving. I'm supposed to be modest, but right now I'm filling my stomach. From being broke, now it's just growth. Everyone eating, yeah. Everyone eating, everyone eating, and it's on me. Pick up your plate, tell them that I came. Bon appetit. Nobody's starving, tell them we did it. Everyone eating. When I tell you that I've been through the worst, I almost lost faith. Almost gave up on God. But I kept going for the Lord's sake. I used to share meals with my brothers. What? Now we got enough so we can eat our own plate. Everyone eating, my brother, we eating. Devour your ego, murder your demons.
But I want us to sort of meditate on some of the events that have been happening this week. It's been a pretty intense week, full of drama and lots of drama, some grieving, some joy as well. Did anyone check out Tekashi 6ix9ine on Instagram? He broke Instagram, y'all.
I saw the video. It was crazy.
I heard about it.
I saw snippets. That's it.
This guy thinks he's the king of New York.
It's funny though. He's not wrong.
You think he's the king of New York?
Well, put it into perspective, right? This guy came out of jail like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
He released a track yesterday.
Yeah.
He broke YouTube. Came on Instagram Live 15 minutes after it dropped.
Yeah.
Breaks Instagram.
Yeah.
You can't call him. You can't say he's not the king at the moment. He's like the Joker of rap right now.
The Joker and the king are different. So to just give a little background for all our listeners, Tekashi 6ix9ine is a 24-year-old rapper from New York, Latinx heritage. He came on the scene toting guns, gang life, etc. I think that the life took him a bit for a whirlwind, and him and his crew, the Train 9 Way Bloods, got caught up in some criminal activity, got caught and got sent to jail. He snitched, ratted, however you want to call it, on his fellow gang members, and now he is out of jail after working with the feds. Now, in hip-hop culture, also something to discuss, this idea of snitching and ratting is not something that's looked upon in the highest regard. In fact, it's a shameful act. Do you think that Tekashi has changed that perspective?
Nah.
No.
I feel like some of the newer generation, like I often feel like J. Cole's middle child. Like, I'm in between generations. I'm 27. But I feel like some of the newer kids, they've like, you know, like I remember, I think it was like 2 years ago, I was in a classroom. No, 2 years of last year, this kid was like, growing up, like, he's like, you know, the bees, and he's like, Treyway, you listen to Tekashi? I was like, yo, listen, like, we had to have a talk. And I was like, that's not the life. And I feel like some people do look up to Tekashi and like, oh, look what he did. Like, he has hits. He has all these different things. And it's a clout thing.
When I think of New York rappers, I put Dave East up there. Not as king. I put Nas over there. You know, they sound New York. Jigga, Jay-Z, they sound New York. But in terms of the new school, like, who's out there from New York really, really popping like that? Pop Smoke had a run.
Yeah.
He did.
Unpopular opinion, I think, if we're talking King of New York, I think it's still Jay. Like, if you gotta you gotta consider this, Kings, they reign a very long time.
Right.
He moves like a boss. A king is a boss. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
but Jay is more like king of the rap world, you know?
Yeah, because like how many artists are under his label, right? Where like his artists are producing fire too. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That. Yeah. You have like the president, but you have to have a governor, you know? And the governor is for the state.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Jigga, of course, king of the rap world. But when it comes to New York, New York.
Is he king of the rap world, though? Is he still king?
Jay-Z's king. Jay-Z's king. Drake? Undeniable.
Drake? He ain't dropped since 2017, though. It's hard.
Drake's a pop rapper. Drake. Yeah. Again, I feel like Jay-Z needs to, right, there's so many different factors that go into this. And you know, I can break down some of the factors. The factors that I look at in terms of reigning rapper are lyricism. And Drake in that scenario, his bars have been questioned.
Every now and then?
Every now and then is different than Jay-Z, who says, I've never written down a rhyme in my life. It's all off the dome. Right? So lyricism, we got to give it to Jay-Z because there hasn't been that question of biting. Yeah?
All right, fine. Hit.
Okay. Okay. Hits. We got to give that to Drake.
Yeah, facts.
Yep.
But if your writing goes into contention, then your hits are also in contention a little bit. But in terms of hits and popularity, we'll give that to Drake.
For sure. Okay.
Legacy, we got to give that to Jay-Z just because he's been alive longer. That's the only reason.
Also, I feel like with Drake, I like his earlier albums and mixtapes more than I like his new ones, just because back then he was rapping about himself. Now I don't feel the same, like within the lyrics, I don't feel the same, like that he's rapping more about himself rather than a lifestyle. Mm. Like anyone can rap about a lifestyle, right? And like, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I feel like what he says isn't like his own like thoughts. You know what I mean? He's just doing it because, yo, this would produce a hit, right? And like, that's what I think.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. I slightly disagree though. I feel like he's reached a level, like he's still talking about his journey, but he's not reached a level of success that I personally cannot relate to. And so like
Wait. Drake has reached a level of success that you can relate to? Drake talks about ordering security for his prom, for his 20-year reunion.
No, I said that I cannot relate
to. Oh, that you cannot relate to.
Yeah. Like he has songs about like, you know, hiding his kid from the world. I don't have kids.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? He's talking about these things and his issues with his dad. You know what I'm saying? Me and my dad are really good. We have a great relationship.
Right.
Like I feel like these days he's talking about himself more.
Mm-hmm.
Just now his journey is now one that I'm very disconnected with. That upstart, that wanting to be the best. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I was all for that because we share those common interests.
Yeah.
You know, peaking. And now what this post fame talks, I don't know how to relate.
Yeah. So okay. So then we have the relatability, which isn't one of my factors, but money. Money's also always important for a rapper, right? Who's got more of it?
Jay-Z.
Until, you know, Drake is going to be remembered legacy-wise, you know, but right now, while both of them are alive, people look to Jay-Z in a way that they don't look to Drake. Mm-hmm. Other rappers revere Jay-Z in a way that they don't revere Drake.
Mm.
You know, king of rap. I mean, you also have Kendrick there, right? And yes, in terms of lyricism, he's probably right up there. But we can't give it to Kendrick because Jay-Z is alive. Is, you know, this is my opinion, right? When people don't put their top
Andre 3000.
Andre 3000 is alive, right? And he's the greatest rapper in a couple of scenarios. Lady M in the building.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Whoop, whoop. Hello, 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 my beloved.
What's good, Lady M?
I'm out here chilling. Just relaxing on a Saturday evening.
Okay, okay. Nice.
My tardiness.
Way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to the family and those who are mourning the death of Ahmaud Arbery. Ahmaud Arbery was shot and killed in a South Georgia neighborhood early in February. Now, there's a lot of like questions about this case. A former detective and his son were recently arrested in connection to the case. I don't know if you guys heard about this scenario, but the shooting happened in February. No charges were made until recently.
I think we need to be careful as Black people because we see it so much that I think most of us are, we are traumatized and we are numb to it because we see it. Like, you're seeing your own brother or your own sister, your own family member being gunned down. So it's like, how do you continue your day knowing that this is happening to your own kinfolk? Which is why, to be honest with you, I didn't even research it because I was just like, I have to protect myself because this is just going to be another thing. Like, yes, we want justice, but you have to pick your battles also. Like, what are you going to invest your time in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lady, I have a question for you. Do you feel like, I know mm-hmm. that there is the notion that people can become desensitized to it,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
do you think that this could also lead to pushing people past their breaking point? Like, I've been seeing a lot of posts talk about how we're tired of that. And like, I myself, like, I'm just like, yo, like, I'm tired of this. Like, I'm not gonna have another, like, mm-hmm. you know, innocent Black unarmed person be gunned down. Mm-hmm. Do you see it perhaps maybe inspiring? I want to choose my next words carefully. A more, I don't want to say militant or radical because mm-hmm. I feel like those mm-hmm. words are very. Have a very aggressive connotation to it, but do you feel like it will inspire some type of movement or some type of, civil discourse to say, hey,
yeah.
we are fed up as a people.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think that I'm a rebel rouser. And if I can be honest with you, I think that many of us are complacent. And I'm going to try and pick my words carefully here. Because we live in the West, we are comfortable. We're comfortable with our gadgets and gizmos. So, you know, we see these we see these things happening on our phones, on social media. And it's not like, and it's, for some of us, it's not really hitting home.
Mm-hmm.
For some of us, like I said, it's numb. For some of us, it does inspire us to do something and inspire us to get on the streets and march and create movements like Black Lives Matter. But my question...
Every second, every minute, man, I swear that she can get it. Say if you up there, put your hands up high. hands up high, hands up high. Tell them the lights down right now. Put me in the mood. I'm talking about dark moon perfume. Go, go.
I recognize your fragrance. Hold up, you ain't never gotta say. And I know you taste this a little bit, high maintenance, everybody else basic. You live life on an everyday basis with poetic justice. If I told you that a flower bloomed in a dark room, would you trust it? I mean, I write poems in these songs dedicated to you when you're in the mood for empathy. It's blood in my pen. Better yet, with your friends and them, I really wanna know you all. I really wanna show you off. Pour up plenty of champagne. Cold nights when you curse this name. You called up your girlfriends and y'all curled in that little bitty range. I heard that she wanna go and party. She wanna go and party. Approach her with that Atari. Then a good game, homie, sorry. They say conversation rule a nation. I can tell, but I could never write my wrongs lest I write it down for real. P.S.
You can get it, you can get it, you can get it, you can get it.
And I know just, know just, know just, know just, know just what you want. Poetic justice, put it in a song, alright.
You can get it, you can get it, you can get it, you can get it.
And I know just, know just, know just, know just, know just what you want. Poetic justice, put it in a song, alright.
I really hope you play this, cause oh girl, you test my patience with all these seductive photographs and all these one-off vacations you've been taking. Clearly a lot for me to take in, it don't make sense. Young East African girl, you too busy the other man. I was trying to put you on game, put you on a plane, take you and your mama to the motherland. I could do it, maybe one day, when you figure out you're gonna need someone. When you figure out it's all right here in the city and you don't run from where we come from. That sound like poetic justice. Poetic justice. You were so new to this life, but you got adjusted. I mean, I write poems in these songs dedicated to the front ass. Your natural hair and your soft skin and your big ass and that sundress. Ooh. Good God, what you doing that walk for? When I see that thing move, I just wish we would fight less and we would talk more. They say communication save relations, I can tell, but I can never write my wrongs unless I write them down for real. P.S.
You can get it, you can get it, you can get it, you can get it.
And I know just, know just, know just, know just, know just what you want. Poetic justice, put it in a song, alright.
You can get it, you can get it, you can get it, you can get it.
And I know just, know just, know just, know just, know just what you want. Poetic justice, put it in a song, alright.
Every time I write these words, they become a taboo. Making sure my punctuation curve, heavy letter hits true. Living my life in the margin, the building. And that metaphor was proof. I'm talking poetic justice.
Hello, 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 my beloved. If I told you what's good, lady? I'm out here chilling. Just relaxing on a Saturday evening.
Okay, okay, nice.
This is my tardiness.
Way to spend a Saturday.
Yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to the family and those who are mourning the death of Ahmed Arbery. Ahmed Arbery was shot and killed in a South Georgia neighborhood early in February. Now, there's a lot of like questions about this case. A former detective and his son were recently arrested in connection to the case. I don't know if you guys heard about this scenario, but the shooting happened in February. No charges were made until recently.
I think we need to be careful as Black people because we see it so much that I think most of us are, we are traumatized and we are numb to it because we see it. Like, you're seeing your own brother or your own sister, your own family member being gunned down. So it's like, how do you continue your day knowing that this is happening to your own kinfolk? Which is why, to be honest with you, I didn't even research it because I was just like, I have to protect myself because this is just going to be another thing. Like, yes, we want justice, but you have to pick your battles also. Like, what are you going to invest your time in?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lady, I have a question for you. Do you feel like I know that there is the notion that people can become desensitized to it, do you think that this could also lead to pushing people past their breaking point? Like, I've been seeing a lot of posts talk about how we're tired of that. And like, I myself, I'm tired of this. Like, I'm not gonna have another, like, you know, innocent black unarmed person be gunned down. Do you see it perhaps maybe inspiring? I want to choose my next words carefully. I don't want to say militant or radical, because I feel like those words are very have a very aggressive connotation to it. But do you feel like it will inspire some type of movement, or some type of civil discourse to say, hey, we are fed up as a people?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think that I'm a rebel rouser. And if I can be honest with you, I think that many of us are complacent, and I'm going to try and pick my words carefully here. Because we live in the West, we are comfortable. We're comfortable with our gadgets and gizmos. So, you know, we see these, we see these things happening on our phones, on social media. And it's not like, for some of us, it's not really hitting home. Mm-hmm. For some of us, like I said, it's numb. For some of us, it does inspire us to do something and inspire us to get on the streets and march and create movements like Black Lives Matter. But my question is, what do we do beyond that? And how do you navigate a system that was not created to protect Black women or Black men and women?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
I mean, I think like we got to be like France, people in France riot. Yeah. They be rioting the streets.
Yeah.
Their politicians accountable.
Do we think that just due to the fact that the world is so focused on pandemic, quarantine, social distancing right now, that that's why it took so long for this to sort of come to the forefront? Is that why it's not as loud as it could have been, right? This is not as loud as Trayvon Martin. This is not as loud as Michael Brown. It doesn't feel as loud. And at the same time, this seems like one of the more obviously racist killings. They, you know, really essentially hunted this guy down, right? And we're talking about Georgia, right? Which it doesn't pass me the history of Georgia and the kind of racial dynamics that exist there. Do we think that the pandemic has had an effect on the way that people have been responding to this?
Yeah, I think it does. You mentioned that it doesn't seem as loud. I think the only reason why it doesn't seem as loud is because that there is another voice that's being heard. Like, we are hearing about the pandemic daily. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And like, if these are two people in a room and they're both screaming out at the top of their lungs, it's going to be hard to identify what voice is whose, right? Mm. And it's not that I don't see the news on this. Because I've been seeing it across all my Black social media platforms. I've been seeing people ride. I've been seeing people post, people run. I've been seeing a whole lot of posts of like run, and all these hashtags. But I do think that people are so, you know, worn out by the pandemic. They're, like I said, two people in a room screaming at the top of their lungs. People just need some quiet.
Right.
I do have a question.
Yeah.
Because it did seem strange to me that, you know, it didn't really get much coverage until now. We're in May.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I always wonder about those things, because even with Trayvon and all that, a lot of those things don't really get traction until like much later when the case is out or something gets leaked, which to me, again, makes me question why the system is like that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this happened in February, and only now are there being arrests being made. And to be honest, if there wasn't a video, and if the person who filmed the video didn't come out, these guys would be living the rest of their lives free. And that's really scary, you know, the fact that someone could get murdered point blank through a hate crime in February and not be arrested until it reaches social media. That's really scary, you know? And what about all the other scenarios where it's not videotaped, where it's not shown on social media? So, I mean, you're right. The amount of time that it took, it is even, you know, there's so many questions. When cops show up and see a Black person dead, you know, like, are they asking questions? Like, what's that all about? It's really, really scary. There's another scenario that happened this past week with a cop and another young man. He was going on a, what would you call it, like a speed chase. And let me just bring it up here. In Indianapolis, a man fatally shot by police after chase streamed the encounter on Facebook. So the fatal shooting was one of three deadly encounters between Indianapolis police and people in the city on Wednesday night to early Thursday. So again, it's like, okay, sure, there's a police chase. Perhaps the young man did something wrong, but does a police chase need to end in murder? Does the violence, is the violence commensurate with the crime? And again, you know, just regardless of the circumstances that surround it, we are seeing another situation where here's a young Black man being shot dead by people who were, you know, who made an oath to serve and protect. And I think that I saw an article once recently saying the Black experience is an experience of constant grieving. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of people were thinking of this pandemic quarantining as like, it felt as though the world is grieving. But I feel like African-American people, Black people are in this constant state regardless, you know? And I think relating it to the pandemic, at least for me, is not that it's the same, not that it's even similar, but you know, this feeling of, I don't know these people personally, but there's a sadness that overcomes you. There's a worry, an anxiety that overcomes you. And similar to this COVID situations where it's like you hear the numbers and there's a weight that's on you. I don't know. I don't know if it's affecting people differently or if this grief is something that you all can relate to.
I think the grief is compounded by that feeling of helplessness. Like I said, it's functioning, it's, you know, navigating a system of white supremacy. How do you dismantle something like that, you know, if you don't have allies, if you don't have people who are, you know, riding for you?
Yeah.
And that's the big question, because these are, you know, these are white police officers who are trained to disarm a suspect without violence. So they're trained. So it's not a matter of not training. So whatever that is going on in that system is what needs to be addressed, and not protecting them. Because how is it since February they've just been walking around? Like that could never happen if it was a Black man. That could never happen if it was the other way around.
Mm-hmm. And I think one thing that this pandemic is making very, very clear is just the disparity. Like, I'm looking at all these protests, and I'm like, bruh. If you were a couple shades darker, it is not going down like that. You're, you know, berating police officers. You're assaulting police officers. you're doing all these things. And I'm like, we don't necessarily have the same privilege to protest or display our frustration when our civil liberties are taken away. Yeah. I'm watching some of these protests and like their privileges being
highlighted. You're talking about the open up the city protests, the anti stay at home protests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, the stats show that the people who are dying mostly from COVID-19, at least in the United States, are African American and Latino folks.
Mm-hmm.
State of Michigan has 13% Black people, but 70% of the people that are dying from COVID are Black. You know, these numbers are indiscriminate. And so, yeah, the privilege to be able to be like, I'm not staying at home. Especially when it's your family that's not dying, especially when it's your people that are not dying.
Yeah.
I know these are difficult pieces to think about, but I do want us to take maybe 5 minutes to do some writing, some meditation on that. Sort of going to create a prompt. We'll take 5 minutes to write. We'll share after. And just a little bit meditation on what it means. Now the theme is running. The young man was going for a jog, so you can take that running however you seem it fit. It can be inspirational. It can be more specific on the actual case, but running will be the topic. I'm just going to play some tunes. We're going to put 5 minutes on the board, and then we will come back. Everyone good?
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, let's get it.
My guy, he lives on the west side, driving to his house in the middle of the night. I swear it's not what it looks like, at least not on the outside. After she heard me karaoke, I guess it's time to admit it. You found a version that can beat it. Said that she said, compare us one more time and you'll regret keeping me in on all your little secrets. Baby got me feeling like all of this is meaningless. I mean it. So why am I on the west side telling myself that it will be different this time? What does it take for you to say it? Guess it's one for the books, right?
I think it's just what it looks like. You're always teasing, leaving. Say it like you mean it. Tell me I should leave and I'll go, but you won't, cause I guess it's hard to admit it. I think we'll always be in there. Say my name. Love is living with me. Might know. Oh, but it's clear as day. Ooh, celebrate. Say my name. Love is.
MC Shad, let's get it.
All right. Murder is defined as the unlawful, premeditated killing of one human being by another. Father and son kill unarmed black man going for a jog. No. Father and son murder unarmed black man going for a jog. Police shoots and kills. No. Police murder. Stop beating around the bush, tiptoeing around the word. These murderers roam free, able to strike at any time, a gun on their hip. Bullets able to bring families to their knees. Bullets make families pray to God. And that's all I got.
Ooh. I really like how you sort of challenge us to think about the semantics and the words and the, right, like the language that the media uses, that politicians use. Oh, unarmed black man shot. And it's like, no, killed, murdered, assassinated, right? Use the right words. Yeah, let me get into it. My feet cannot stop moving. They walk along roads paved by the backs of the broken. I want to be like Mike, because Jordan is alive. What's the point of new Nikes when those on Air Force One don't give a hoot about the souls with fire on their tongues and laces around their necks? Who can tell the difference between running from oppression and running towards freedom? Either way, the target must move. The black bullseye, the bulletproof body must move.
Wow.
Running, yeah, I'm running towards my future. Keeping my eyes on the prize with that 2020 vision. Take a break to tie my shoes because life is a teacher. I won't stop till I get to the finish line. Yeah, just keep a steady pace. These haters love to see it when I fall, but I just get back up and rise above it all. So this is for anyone that ever felt discouraged from chasing their dreams. Just take a minute to refocus.
Yeah.
Rosa sat. So Martin marched, so Obama ran, but we're running out of patience. Being black is the hangover of a Molotov cocktail. Let us riot until the streets are drunk off our rage. Dizzy our compliance until we blur the lines of civil disobedience. We've come so far. Civil rights, glass half full, but let me drink until I throw up a picket sign. Or at least a middle finger.
Wow.
Let's go.
Wow. Okay.
Let's go.
Wow. Viva la revolución.
That's it. You know, sometimes we end the program with a beautiful note, but sometimes it's all about the revolution. This is what it is. This is Speak On It, brought to you by the Black Poet Residency and the Hamilton Youth Poet.